Okay, well, while Chris finishes setting up, I'm just going to introduce him. Also, quick note, there's a sign-up sheet going around, so just make sure that you sign it. I know last week a couple of you didn't. So just before you leave, make sure that you actually signed in. Come see me. If the sign-up sheet didn't make it to you, just make sure that you actually put your name down. Thank you. Okay. I wanted to introduce Chris Kirk, who works here in the library. He's a really great resource when you begin to do your research. Go in and talk to him, especially when you have a specific topic to. You can ask him about how to research on that. Today he's going to talk to us about what to do in the library and how exactly you discover good material for your annotated essays. So let's welcome Chris. Thanks.
Thank you for that.
We are experiencing a few technical difficulties trying to get my computer to work, and which might be considered the first lesson of research. You anticipate the technical difficulties and delays. Be ready for them. Okay, so hang on 1 second. So the title of my talk today is, What Do I Do in the Library? Before I get started, let me get some information from you if I could. Who are you and why are you in the writing lab? Anybody? Yeah, I know, everybody who's talking.
I'm a sophomore student trying to learn how to write better.
Okay. All right, that's good. Anybody else? Anybody else?
I'm a freshman trying to learn how to formulate sentences better, how to make them flow as well.
Well, if I can take two of you to be indicative of the whole, I assume that most of your concerns are going to be about composition. How do I write an essay better, right? Okay. Well, that is a major, if not the major, component of your papers here. But you will also be asked to write a research paper. I believe you have one in LitTrad 2. I don't know if you have any more in the LitTrad sequence. You might, you definitely will, once you start taking your junior level and your senior level coursework in your majors. So, what is a research paper? Let me start by asking, who in here has ever done a research paper? All right, was that for UD or was that for somewhere else? Was that somewhere else? Somewhere else. Okay. Well, what was that experience like for you? Was it fun? Enjoyable? Can't wait to do it again? Why not? Why is it not enjoyable for some of you? Yes, ma'am?
It's a process, a long process.
Okay, it's a long process. This sounds frustrating. Well, let's start by asking, what is a research paper? What distinguishes it from just a regular paper that you would write for, say, Lit Trad 1? I will point at people.
Yes, ma'am. You're analyzing something like a topic, but you're also other people's sources as backup for what you're trying to prove.
Okay. Secondary sources, right? Not just the primary text or author or whoever or subject that you're studying. You're also integrating information, opinions, evidence, what have you, from other scholars who've written books or articles about your topic. Why do we ask you to do a research paper? Why do we bother with them? Why don't we just have you do nothing but just argumentative papers where you read a text, offer your own opinions about it, back it up with reasons that you provide, and that be the end of it? Why do we have you look for secondary sources and commentary? There's not really a right answer here. Just whatever. Yes, ma'am.
Look it up mainly to like
increase positive points about your opinions, or to be able to find out like what the other side would be saying, and being able to build up your argument and then deal the other side.
Yeah, but can't you do that for yourself?
It's stronger when there's other like opinions that are also like from scholars and from people that are well versed in fields.
Right. Very good. All right. I'm hoping this thing works today. Okay, it works. If you find, let's say that your topic is, you're interested in, I had a student come in and ask me for sources that are on Adam and Eve in Milton's Paradise Lost. Okay. Let's say you find a 300-page massive treatment book that's exactly on that topic. Now, why is that valuable? Why is that important? Let me throw another monkey wrench into it. Let's say you look at this 300-page book and you come to the studied, well-considered conclusion that this person's a moron. But they do great research. Why is it still important that you found this massive book that's exactly on your topic? Yes?
Could you follow the works that they cited and find additional works that you could go for to extend your research?
Right. That would lead to one of the most important rules of research. One second. Did it just fall out? Weird.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Oh. Okay, good. I'm glad it's still here. Alright, there we go. Yes, one of the most important rules of research that you should keep in mind, and I'm giving you the tips out of my own playbook, things that I do and use anytime I'm writing a major research paper, starting new research on a topic. Rule number, I won't say rule number one, but I will say it's a major rule. Find one book, preferably two or three articles that are exactly on your topic. So if your topic is heresy in Dante's Inferno, your topic is not Dante's Inferno. That's too broad. You're interested in a particular aspect or subject or subtopic within the greater field of Dante's Inferno. Okay? So again, to repeat, find one or two major sources, preferably books, because they tend to be bigger and more thoroughly researched. But articles are good as well. Also, try to get the most up-to-date major sources that you can. Again, it's not about that source being totally right or perfectly authoritative. It's the fact that if someone has spent years of his or her life writing a major academic or scholarly book on a subject, chances are he or she has done a lot of the research legwork for you. Bibliographies in the back of these books, and also in articles, provide a map of much, if not most, of the major research on your topic. But again, it's important. Make sure the source that you find is exactly on your topic. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about how we find such sources. Give me a second so I can get logged in here. So we are connected. Jerry must have used this last night. Now, I said that is one of the major rules of research, but I also said that it's not rule number one. Rule number one of research should be something you all can guess. So guess. Yes. Yes, that's important, but that's not the most important. let me talk about that for a second. Choose a topic you care about. Why is that an important? It's not a rule, but it's a good guideline. Why would you want to choose something you care about? Why?
Because if you're passionate about something, it doesn't seem as much as like tedious work to look up information about it.
Right. You're going to do a better job. More thoroughly. You're going to stick with it a lot longer. It's not that you will never be asked or required to do research on a topic you're not in love with. That happens all the time. In fact, anytime you research, even if you're researching a topic that you are in love with, you're still going to have to learn a lot of peripheral things that you won't love. Okay? But going back to... I understand the risks. Come on, what is this mess? Giving me a... Going back to the original question I asked, what is the most important rule of research? Anybody else? Anyone else want to take a stab at it? It's real simple.
Don't copy any
word. Okay, that's not actually a research rule. That's just a general rule of life. Don't steal. In our Art of Library Research class we teach in the library, I don't really emphasize plagiarism because from what I understand, you receive this lecture about 10 times, you know, after you've gotten here, not to mention all the times you got here before. Okay. The best way to avoid plagiarism is also very simple. Cite your sources. Okay. There are ways to plagiarize even if you are citing. But if, generally speaking, if you're giving credit where credit is due, you will avoid plagiarizing. I tend to believe, I have this prejudice, really, that people who plagiarize know what they're doing, but from what I understand, that's not always true today. But in any case. Now, the most important rule of research is ask for help. You're already paying my salary. Come to the library. Get something for your money. That's what the reference librarians are here for. We are here to help you with finding sources that are on your topic. You can waste a lot of time and a lot of energy and not get very far when it comes to library research. You can spend hours upon hours in Google just blindly trying to find something, scrolling through hundreds of search results. And yeah, maybe you might find one or two things that kind of look good, mostly because you're desperate and you don't know how to do anything else. Well, that probably doesn't refer to anybody in this room. But certainly we know people who are like that. The point about research is you don't have an infinite amount of time, you don't have an infinite amount of energy, and you need to find not just okay sources that are somewhat relevant to your topic, but the best sources that are exactly on your topic. And this is possible to do. Now, enough of the preliminaries. How much time do I have left, Tiffany?
About half now.
Okay, we're good to go. Now, I have this nifty little PowerPoint that I usually use, but oftentimes I find it's not as helpful. It's just walking you through what I would do if I'm in a situation where I'm writing a research paper or I'm doing research on a topic. Now, here's the cool thing about research. Cool to me. You don't have to know anything about your topic to be able to do research well on it. I don't care if it's one of the most arcane subjects in particle physics. The point about research is that it's intentionally a situation where you go from a state of not really knowing much about your topic to knowing the major issues, major sources, questions, academic questions that pertain to that topic. In other words, you will know at the very least what you need to know to be able to discuss that topic intelligently. Now, one big mistake a lot of people make when they start a research project is they go immediately into the databases. Okay? I mean, it's not really a mistake, but it can be. It can turn into one. What is one of the big... let me rephrase this. When you're dealing with academic papers written in a journal, Who are those academic, for whom are those academic papers usually written? Are they written for beginning freshmen or sophomores at the University of Dallas? No, not usually. They assume a lot. They're specialists writing for other specialists. Okay? I'm earning my second master's degree here, and I can tell you, trying to read some of these journal articles, it's like, it's just, you know, the whole phrase, it's Greek to me. But Greek, I've taken Greek, it's a lot easier than trying to understand a lot of these articles. Why? Because they're experts writing for experts. So if you jump too quickly into the databases, a lot of times you're sort of in a position of trying to, it's like overhearing a conversation across the room. You can pick up little bits and pieces of it, and you kind of have a sense of that what they're talking about might have something to do with your topic, but you can't understand all of it. And so you oftentimes force yourself to try to either pretend you understand it and you don't, or shoehorn a quote that you just grab from some part of the article, whether it's relevant or not. Because, you know, my teacher said I had to have 5 sources, and I've got to have 5 sources, and I've got to get this done in 24 hours, and I'm already, you know, behind, and I'm tired of this, and I want this to be over. Kill me now. You know, that's what happens. That's what happens. That's not really research. That's jumping through a hoop. Okay? We all do it. I've done it. I'm just saying, that's not what I'm trying to teach you. I'm trying to teach you, I'm trying to teach you what it's like when you do it the right way. When it's something you really care about. If, for instance, let's say you had, you know, let's say your youngest child had this rare disease, okay? And you took your child to the doctor, and the doctor, you know, he acts confused. He's like, I don't know what's going on with this child. You know, I don't know. And he sends you to a specialist. And then you go to the specialist, and the specialist says, well, your doctor has, global lymphoma of the soul or something. I don't know, God. I'm a UD. Global lymphoma of the soul. That would be a UD disease. Anyway, if that's your child, you care about your child, and you want your child to survive and be healthy, you are going to do your research right. You are not going to get the first 5 sources and then go to bed saying, done. You're going to make sure you understand the issue because you care, because it's important. That's the kind of research I'm talking about. What do I need to know about research so I can get informed about a topic when it's important, when I really need to know and I'm not just jumping through a hoop? Okay. Again, I that was a little wordy. I'm sorry about that. I do find that that's important to... You better postpone this. You restart after all that mess. A little crazy. All right. So that was my spiel. That was my preliminary theoretical introduction. Now what I'm about to do is I'm going to call on you to suggest a topic. It might be a topic you're writing a paper on right now. It might be a topic that you might be writing a paper on somewhere down the road. Okay? It doesn't really matter. But I'm going to show you what I would do to get started. The first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to try to get an overview of my topic. Well, the only way that I can do that is I've got to get the right subject terms for that topic that will lead me to certain kinds of sources, primarily subject encyclopedias. This is because I'm starting out. I don't know very much about my topic, remember? I'm just getting going. So I need an overview. I need a kind of summary of all the major literature, theoretical issues that's written for my level. Not an expert writing for an expert like in the databases. I'm talking about something written for laymen, beginners, generalists like ourselves. So somebody suggests to me a topic. It can be about anything. Yes? Yes?
The dialogue between God and the Son in Paradise Lost.
Dialogue between God and the Son in Paradise Lost. Well, I'm going to confess something to you. and this might be scandalous to Tiffany, I haven't read Paradise Lost. I've read the first part, few parts of it, but that's okay. That's okay.
It's in the first three books.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
That's good to know. Dialogue between God and the Son. All right. That's a fairly specific topic. So, probably the first thing I want to do is see if there's a subject encyclopedia that deals with that topic. Now, what is a subject encyclopedia? We're not talking about World Book. I'm not talking about Encyclopedia Britannica. I'm talking about something like this. And notice I'm in Amazon. Don't freak out. It's just a place to start. Milton Encyclopedia. All right. Most major authors in the core have subject encyclopedias devoted to them. In these encyclopedias, there are usually tables of contents and subject indexes. If there's a topic within Milton, chances are it's going to be listed in a subject encyclopedia like this. Can everybody see this, by the way? Can everybody see that? It's a little crooked.
I can't get it just right, but anyway.
That's a subject encyclopedia. It's very narrow. It's all about Milton. But all I did was put in some keywords in Amazon. That's not really a very efficient thing to do. But it's okay because I found one source that's exactly on my topic. Now, anyway, now watch what I do. Obviously, I'm not staying in Amazon to do all my research. That would be foolish in the stream. What's interesting as well is I'm not necessarily going to UD's library catalog yet. Why? Because I'm looking for all of the relevant overview sources on my topic, particularly books right now because I'm in a library catalog. I want to see if there are any other Milton encyclopedias. So I went to the Library of Congress online catalog, the largest library in the Western Hemisphere. I believe it's the largest library in the world. And the reason why I'm going to it is because almost all academic libraries in the United States use the same call number system and same subject terms that Library of Congress does. Okay? And because it's so large, if there is something published on my topic, Library of Congress is likely to have it. Now, you don't have to go to LC. You can go to Yale University Library, University of Chicago Library, Harvard University Library, any gigantic academic library. The Ivy League is a good place to start. Will usually have something is an academic text and it's published on your topic. Usually it will be in one of these library catalogs. And they all use LC system. All right, so let's do this. Milton Encyclopedia. Right now I'm just using a title search. I want to find the very same thing. Here, let me zoom a little bit so y'all can see. Where's my zoom? Ah, Mozilla, you changed everything. Ah, here we go. All right. You can see that a little bit better. All right, I just want to find the title I already located using keywords in Amazon. All right, so already I've already found it. Okay, I'm going to click on it. Now, what I'd like you to do is pay attention to two things primarily. This number right here, this is your LC classification. This is the full LC classification number, otherwise known as a call number. Now, why do I care so much about that number? After all, I don't know that this Milton Encyclopedia is actually going to help me all that much. I haven't looked at it yet. Somebody raise their hand. Yes, ma'am.
Is it to know
But why would that be where I want to look? It's okay.
When you use the classification number, since it's classification number, you could technically type it into the JSTOR or something possibly on the UD like library, possibly to see if there's similar. Since it's the class same classification in most areas, you might type it in and find it somewhere else.
Yeah, I don't think I don't know if you can do it in JSTOR. You can do it in the UD catalog, but why is that helpful to you is the question.
Because you don't have to buy it, and you wouldn't have to buy the book online like an Amazon or.
Well, yeah, I mean, a call number, its first purpose is to help you locate the book, sure. But like I just said, I don't know if this encyclopedia is going to help me all that much. So the call number is important because I still know that the encyclopedia is on my topic or very closely related to it. So even if that particular encyclopedia doesn't work out for me, other books that are on the same topic will be shelved nearby. I can skim them. I can browse them. This is something that students today do not do, and it screws them over, frankly. Because you can't do all of your research in a catalog. You can't do it in a search box. You have to get up, go to the shelf, and look around a little bit. If you're willing to do that, you oftentimes will go to the shelf looking for that one encyclopedia book, whatever it is, that you thought was going to be so great. You might look at it and think, well, it's not really helping me all that much. And yet, two books over is the book that helped you out, that you could not have guessed was there, but because you were in the right place in the right time, you found it. How do you browse books on a shelf? Skim the introduction, table of contents, and check the subject index for your topic. So the dialogue between God and the Son, you're going to be looking at the subject index for that. You're going to be looking at tables of contents for that. Okay? All right, that's how you do it. And that is it's a very, very useful rule. So that's it for the call number. That's why we care about that. But we also care about subject headings. Now, UD's catalog uses these subject headings as well. But I'm going to click on the one in Library of Congress because I want to see how many subject encyclopedias on John Milton there probably are. There might be more, but I know, but LC probably has them. So I'm going to click on this subject heading. And it shows me two, that there are two. I just happen to know this. This is the one we have in the library. Published in 1978. I don't like it. Doesn't do what it's supposed to do. A good subject encyclopedia will cover the full range, just about, of topics that deal or touch upon your subject, so John Milton, or John Milton's Paradise Lost in this case. It will have a good subject index, and at the end of each article, will be a preliminary bibliography to get you started. Remember what the rule was? You're finding two or three articles that are exactly on your topic. If you can find a subject encyclopedia article on that topic, and it has a bibliography in the back, that gets you, that's your key, that's your gateway into the rest of it. Why? Because you can go get those other sources, check the bibliographies, which are a map to other sources, and so on. Now, this isn't an endless process. If you've looked at enough sources, you're going to have a generally good idea as to what's been published on your topic, both in the journals and in the book collection. Okay? It won't take forever. The end point you're trying to reach is find 20 to 30 sources. Well, you find three times as many sources as you're going to use. So if you have a paper whose secondary source requirement is 5 secondary sources, you should be looking for 15 books and or articles that are exactly on your topic. Not kind of on your topic, exactly on your topic. Why? It's like going to the buffet. You don't go to the buffet necessarily to eat every single thing that's on the menu, or not on the menu, but in front of you. You go to the buffet so you can pick. pick your favorite. That's what you're doing here. You're deliberately trying to get more sources than you need so that you can pick the best ones. That actually makes it easier for you to find good quotes that support your thesis that you're trying to argue. By the way, you don't just do research to find things to support your point of view, by the way. There are other things you can do. Self-challenge is an enormously important thing to do with research. Let's go back just briefly to the example I had of your sick child. Okay. Let's say that you've read two books and an article that say that to treat global lymphoma of the soul, you have to put your child on, you know, this special iodine treatment, whatever. Okay. Now, you want to be right. You can't afford to be wrong. So in that situation, you're going to, if you really are being careful, you're going to deliberately look for other experts who contradict that and say, that's not the right treatment. It's actually this other treatment. You're going to try to get different perspectives. Even if you have a strong conviction that one side is right, you still want to check. You still want to challenge yourself. We're prejudicial creatures. Okay? That's another major use of research. All right. Now, once I know what encyclopedias or what books are exactly on my topic that are out there, I can take the call numbers and the subject headings and go back into UD's catalog. Now, how many people in here have used UD's library catalog? If you have any questions about how to do it, everybody sees this is the library webpage. Okay? It's right here. Online catalog. You can also use another link that says UD Discovery. It'll do more or less the same thing. It's a more comprehensive search. Okay. So if I want to look things up by subject headings, I'm going to put in Milton. It's not going to take me directly to the books. It's going to take me to other headings. Let's see if I can find John Milton. I hate the way they do this. Our catalog is not the most rational in the world, but it's still definitely important. Okay, so here you go. Here's that heading. But you can also see other headings. Watch out for these certain subheadings, like encyclopedias, handbooks, manuals, etc., dictionaries, okay, things like that. Again, these subject headings, and this is a browse display of subject headings, can give you a further subject breakdown into the topic at hand. All right, we've got about 7 minutes. Now, usually, most times a librarian talks about library research, they go immediately into the databases, but I deliberately avoid doing that. Again, I want to reemphasize, please ask for help. I can't cover nearly what I would need to cover to really teach you how to do research. That's why we offer a semester-long class, Art of Library Research. Please consider taking it at some point in your career. But these are the broad strokes. So let's go into the databases. Now, I could go directly into the databases. This is an A to Z list. I don't want to do that. It's hard to pick out which databases I need to be in. So what I'll do is I'll get to them through the subject guides. Now, has anybody in here used our subject guides? Okay. Not very many people, huh? All right, well, if you take a look, this is a list of them, links to them. They pretty much correspond to our majors. So if you are doing research on Milton or Dante or whatever, you're probably going to want to pick literature and literary criticism. But please keep in mind that all of our subjects have subject guides. All of our majors have subject guides. Now, I want to find a database. Now, I could go into the general databases. Now, general databases cover a lot of different disciplines at the same time. So things like JSTOR, that covers a ton of fields. Not just English, but art, history, political science, philosophy. Okay? So yes, you are going to want to try to search those. But today, I want to concentrate on a specifically literary database. This is MLA, International Bibliography. It is an EBSCO database. You see this screen? You're going to get familiar with it if you do research around here. EBSCO is probably the largest vendor of databases, no matter what the field, and they all use this same interface. Now, going back to your topic, you said Dialogue of God and the Son in Paradise Lost. Okay, let's try this. Dialogue, God, Son. I'm going to do Paradise Lost. Now, when we start a database search, you want to start as specific as you can. It's really the same principle as it is with the book search. You don't want to start with John Milton. You're going to get the phone book if you do that. Okay? Don't do that. Start as specific as you can. Now, a lot of times when you do this, you don't get anything. Okay? That's all right. Don't freak out. Let's just see what happens. Search results. One of one. All right. Yeah, that's just not enough. The sweet spot is really, you should be getting between 50 and 100 results. Sometimes you can get fewer, sometimes you can get more. But if you didn't get much more than 100 results, there's too many to scroll through. If you get very few, like one, then that suggests that your search is too narrow. You need to broaden it a little bit. So, let's do Paradise Lost again. God and the Son. Now, does everybody see these little Boolean operators? You ever heard of that term before? All right. Well, if you haven't, it just means if you're using and, it means that the database is going to search for all of those terms in the item record. Now, these records are like catalog records. It's not the actual article that it's searching necessarily, can be, but it's what catalogers or the abstractors who work for the database company, how they summarize that source. Let's see if I get anywhere with this. Okay, I got more. Now, this is probably a lot easier to search. Now, your topic may be a little too narrow. Simply because perhaps nobody has actually written about that specific set of terms. Dialogue of God and the Son. However, if you look for things that are likely to mention it or deal with it, if it's a major episode, for instance, in Milton's treatment of God or the Son, then if you find something that deals with one or the other, chances are it's going to be dealt with on some level. So, but you won't necessarily know that on the front end. That's why you have to scan the abstracts. Does everybody know that these are abstracts? That just means a summary of what the article's about. You should scan your abstracts when you do your search retrievals. Okay? Before you read any single article. Okay? Because you don't have an infinite amount of time. All right, well, like I said, very broad strokes, and I'm sorry if I didn't give you enough meat on the bone, but that's why you got to come and ask us for help, because we can go into more detail, which I'm sure you're just dying to do. Does anybody have any more questions or questions at this point? Yes?
How do you go about, after that, if you find a book that you really want, but we don't have in the library, how do you get it?
Good question. Does anybody know the answer to her question? You know there's a book out there, isn't it?
Is it the interlibrary loan?
Yes. Interlibrary loan. Get it. Get an account set up. It's real easy. It's free. You go to our library webpage, okay, and sign up. It's the easiest thing in the world. You will use this. Our library is very small compared to a lot of places. If you limit yourself to the sources that you can get simply through JSTOR or what we happen to have, well, that may be okay, but it may not be. You may be missing more than you get. You may be missing more than you find. You may be forcing yourself to use sources that wouldn't be as helpful as the ones you could get from another library. Interlibrary Loan will borrow books from other libraries on your behalf. And again, remember, if it's a 300-page massive tome on your topic, the bibliography is a map to most of the research that's been done on that topic up till that point when it was published. Make your life easy, but also make your research good. Anyway, that's it for what I've got. So thank you for coming, and thank you for listening to me.
My college yesterday.